Another edition of Pittsburgh Pop with Rob Owen and Tim Benz with you, starting off August. This is your place to find our weekly conversation about all things pop culture in Pittsburgh and beyond. Rob Owen, you can read him TV Talk, TV Q&A once a week. Check me out, Breakfast with Benz at Trib Live, covering the sports scene, but we also occasionally bleed into some pop culture as well. I know we will be doing so when the hair metal band tour comes through, the stadium tour with Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Poison, and Joan Jett next week, Rob. I'm really looking forward to that.
Enjoy yourself.
Also, who else will be there? Yep, Greta Van Fleet and Metallica will be there two nights later. Billy Joel will be there. Rob, these are the only reasons to go to PNC Park these days.
Well, and Metallica is having a moment thanks to Stranger Things on Netflix, where one of their songs is.
Let's start there, because we never really talked about that, did we? We talked about Stranger Things quite a bit, but we never talked about it through the lens of Metallica. Which song is it? Do you remember? And which one has everybody, or why does it have everybody buzzing? Because it's basically no one realized how old Metallica was until all these kids who watch Stranger Things go, hey, who are those guys? They're kind of fun.
Yeah, it's a little bit that. And I think that there's, you know, in the first half of the season of Stranger Things season 4, there was the I think it's the Kate Bush song Running Up That Hill. And that really took off thanks to Stranger Things. And I think the use of Master of Puppets in the second half of the season really took off. And yeah, I think part of it is a little bit a new generation discovering perhaps these songs of yesteryear.
Well, hey, anything in my opinion to keep rock music alive, be it Greta Van Fleet opening for them or whatever, I'm all about. Stranger Things, doesn't matter. I'm happy with all of it. It was a tough day, Rob, yesterday sports-wise, because Bill Russell passed away. You know, especially for me, I grew up a Celtics fan. Bill Russell was an icon who I never saw play. I was just doing a stream that we do each and every week, Madden Benz Unfiltered with Mark Madden. And I was recollecting about how my dad, who was a diehard Pittsburgh sports fan, which is how I became a Pittsburgh sports fan. There's no NBA team, of course, but we both liked the Celtics. That was convenient because I was growing up in New England at the time. But he spoke about Bill Russell with the same reverence and tone that he did Mean Joe Green and Roberto Clemente. Like, that's the kind of guy that Bill Russell was to fans of the Celtics and fans of the NBA. And then from a celebrity news standpoint, it was really unfortunate for people who were fans of Star Trek on that same day to find out that Nichelle Nichols, Lieutenant Uhura on Star Trek, had passed away at the age of 89. I think they're almost the same age. Bill Russell was 88, and that headline came out just a few hours after.
Yeah, no, the passing of Nichelle Nichols, who's best known as Lieutenant Uhura, is a big loss for those of us who grew up on Star Trek. You know, I think the only remaining original primary cast members are now the actors who play Sulu, Chekhov, and Kirk, and everyone else from the series has passed. Uhura was an especially important one because she was one of the first Black women seen in a sort of position of authority on television. The fact that she was on the bridge, that she was working with this diverse crew, made a big impact on viewers. And in particular, she did a lot to recruit for the space program and helped diversify the ranks of NASA. In addition to Star Trek, she also recurred on Heroes many, many years later, sort of like in the twilight of her career. And she was great. I always loved her as Uhura. I loved how they gave her more stuff to do in the movie series that followed in the 80s and 90s. And she will most definitely be missed.
How did you find the community that still is attached to Star Trek react to the news yesterday? Were you tracking it online a little bit, Twitter, Facebook, that sort of thing, interactions,
yeah,
et cetera?
On Twitter, I was following a lot of the tweets from people who had either worked with her or known her. You know, I'm sure I probably talked to her at press tour, but I didn't have any great stories to share about meeting her or talking to her. But I really appreciated those who did. There were just some really nice tributes put to Twitter. And then There was another death yesterday as well that didn't get quite as much coverage as Russell or Nichols, and that was Pat Carroll, who was the voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid and had a very long stage career. So yeah, it was a sad day yesterday for fans of pop culture and sports entertainment culture.
Let's get to something local here, Rob. High School Musical, native of Bethel Park, is only a guest star this season. What's going on there?
Yeah, so Tim Frederly, who's the showrunner of High School Musical and an Upper St. Clair High School graduate, talked to me a couple weeks ago about the new season. This is the third season of the show, and they left the high school in the show and they are going to camp this season. He said that was his idea and a way to sort of invigorate the show. And it also was a way to explain away why not all of the characters would be there, including the one played by Olivia Rodrigo, who has suddenly become a pop star and needed to go on tour and exit the series. So using that format of going to camp, they are able to exit her from the show this season, but it also necessitated exiting some other characters as well who are not going on pop tours. And that included Joe Serafini from Bethel Park. He was recurring in season one. He was a series regular in season two. Now he's back to a guest star in season three. Tim wouldn't say how many episodes he's in, so I'm guessing that means one, but we'll see. All I know is that he will return in the latter half of the season, and High School Musical, the series, is a weekly release, not a binge release, so fans will just have to keep watching on Disney Plus.
Also, what happened with the Dave Crawley case against KDKA? Did that finally come to fruition?
Yeah, so the Trib's Paula Reed Ward reported that Dave Crawley, his suit against KDKA TV was thrown out of federal court. That was a suit that was about his departure from the station, although I use departure in air quotes because he's still listed. If you look at the KDKA news team website, you will see that Dave Crawley is still listed there. And I'm sure that that was done on the advice of lawyers. So he was in an accident while covering the Red Bull Flutag, I think is
yeah, what it's right. Called. He actually got on one of the Flutags to do a demonstration, right? For the
right. And yes, exactly so. And this was several years ago now. I don't remember exactly how many.
2017.
Was it 2017?
Yeah.
Okay. And he was injured in that. He came back to work for a few days, but then I think it was 10 days, but then after that he had to beg off because he was having some cognitive issues.
He claims he collapsed during a story a couple days later or something to that effect.
Yeah, that was the first time I had heard that piece of the story. But KDK and parent company ViacomCBS had asked for summary judgment because Crawley had filed an age discrimination lawsuit, and the judge threw that out. And let's see what else here. The lawsuit was filed in March of 2020. And they said that Crawley failed to prove age discrimination or retaliation. The age discrimination one always seemed like a tough one for me, just because they're at the time of that all of this was happening, KDK had the most veteran reporting staff in town. Now, a lot of those people have since retired or left the station. But at the time, that one seemed like a big hurdle to me anyway. So it will be interesting to see if and when Crawley's bio disappears from the website. I presume he's not coming back to the station, that he will simply retire, but I have that question out to his wife, who has been his spokesperson basically since such time that this all took place.
Yeah, I remember when that took place back in 2017. I remember reading about it, and I think it just kind of speaks to how long and drawn out these processes can be. You know, we're talking about this from, at least in a sports capacity, the lens of what's happening for Deshaun Watson. But, you know, if you were to extrapolate that and put it out to somebody that's not, you know, beyond into the real world, beyond the shell of the National Football League, you know, something like that with 20 something civil lawsuits doesn't get moved along at the speed that we think it should, because there's the timetable of season to season. Like, you know, in this case with Dave Crawley, it's five. This is a 5-year old story at this point now that is just now. And I'm not even going to say it's fully resolved, but it's just even gotten to this point.
Right. Well, that's the big difference between civil litigation and criminal, right?
Right. Yes.
You have a right to a speedy trial in criminal, not in civil.
Yeah. And in the case specifically of Deshaun Watson, much like was the case with Ben Roethlisberger, there were no criminal charges that were filed in either situation. And there were civil cases that proceeded. A lot of them eventually were taken care of by Watson and either dismissed or settled or whatever. But none of them rose to the level of a criminal complaint, at least not to this point. And that story became, at least the next chapter was written this morning, right before we started to record, where Watson was given a 6-game suspension from the judge who was trying to settle the case. The NFLPA had said in advance that it wasn't going to challenge any decision. We will see what the NFL does. They have 72 hours to respond. One other sports note, Rob, I wanted to pass along here because we brought it up on the last podcast. I went and made a note that I had to before you and I spoke again to watch The Great Imposter on ESPN, the E60 documentary about Barry Brennan, who was the sports imposter, the guy who was part of mainstream pop culture in the late 70s and early 90s, who became known for crashing sporting events, that he would dress up as a member of, say, for instance, the NBA All-Star team or the Major League Baseball All-Star team. Or one time he got on the field for a Thanksgiving Day game between the Redskins and the Cowboys, where he dressed up as a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader. I think it was on Thanksgiving. He would like impersonate all these people and manage to get on the field, crash it, even crash the Emmys once. And that's actually, as it turns out, and watch the documentary, where things started to take a turn and people said, well, this isn't cute anymore, because you kind of ruined somebody's moment who got in a war
right
as an imposter. So that's where it started to turn. I think that's where he stopped doing it. The whole impersonation routine, even though he became famous on Letterman, he became famous on Johnny Carson for doing all these little stunts. But the underlying story that no one knew about really until recent years was that he was also apparently the world's greatest sperm donor.
Oh, in boy. That
he actually almost repopulated a town in Michigan or something like this, where the documentary takes a hard right-hand turn after he dies. He died of, I think it was throat cancer in the early 2000s. And we come to find out that because his second son had cerebral palsy when he was born, he and his wife wanted to make sure that people who had a hard time conceiving or knew that there were going to be at-risk pregnancies for one reason or another, they took it upon themselves to try to help those who were having trouble conceiving. So okay. He does the sperm donation thing, and a bunch of his samples populated. And I guess back in the day, I didn't know this, but there was sort of a wild, wild west element to sperm donation, in the sense that if a donation clinic had a sample that they knew populated well, they would then sell that sample to other clinics.
Oh boy.
And they would call back the donor who donated in the first place and said, hey, we're having some luck. Do you feel like coming back and giving another sample? We'll pay you to do it. And they would subcontract out his sperm, essentially. And what they found was he like had somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 positive conceptions, most of which were in like a square mile radius of, you know, X number of miles from Detroit, Michigan, which gets a little dicey when you consider how genetics work. And lo and behold, what if you should go to, Wright State University and not know that you're hooking up with your half sister? Because that became part of the conversation in this. And part of the reason why rules are put in place now to prevent such things. And it wasn't, fortunately, a male and female half brother, half sister, like I was describing there, but two kids that were half brothers of his sperm donation told the story of how they were at Wright State together, same year, same graduating class. One guy remembers watching the other guy play on the football team. They never actually met, but that kind of makes you think,
right?
What if you went to high school together? What if you went to college together? What if you met up at a cocktail hour together and said, hey, can I get your number? And you start dating somebody you're related to. And when you have that many people populating within a square mile radius, like there was all these stories about like, hey, weren't we at a business meeting together this one time at a luncheon so-and-so? And it's freaky, man. But at the same point, it's just this weird connection of two completely separate storylines that somehow have come together with this one guy who was famous for basically being a prankster and for no other reason besides that. It's just, it was a very involved, in-depth documentary, and it was, I don't know, 90 minutes, it was worth it, I thought. There's my contribution for the week. Aside from that, I was all training camp all the time, and I don't know what pop culture I could advance to you from training camp.
Yeah, the only other thing I have to offer is this week, Reservation Dogs is back. That is the FX on Hulu show. That is a comedy drama. I would say in the first two episodes of the new season, it's probably a little bit more of a drama than a comedy, but it's set on an Indian reservation in Oklahoma, and season two launches on Wednesday of this week on Hulu, and I highly recommend it. It's a really good show. It's about these kids, and they're kind of traumatized. Their friend hung himself a year ago, but there is humor to it as well. It's a little bit more of the kind of smile and be amused variety humor than big belly laughs, but it's well done. The kids are great, and then Zahn McLaren, who's the star of Dark Winds, has a supporting role as a cop in the town. So I recommend Reservation Dogs without reservation, but no problem.
Rob, thanks. Anything else in TV Talk or TV Q&A? What are people stressing about when it comes to their local news coverage this week?
Oh, my goodness. I think we're back to concerns about the Pirates coverage on AT&T Sportsnet. And let's see, we've resolved.
Is this what you're interacting with somebody about on Twitter about when the start times are or something like that?
Oh, no, I think the start time was in last week's TV Q&A.
Okay,
This week, it's not identifying batters. But also that AT&T Sportsnet has updated their graphics so that the position of the person batting, that abbreviation has been added, which was a concern someone had back in June. So somebody had a concern. Look at that. It's taken care of.
Oh,
so
we are changing. Yes, that's why journalism exists. We are. Mm-hmm. That's right. We are the impetus for change. We are the catalyst to right wrongs. That's why we got into this business in the first place.
And then later this week, TV Talk, we've got Mason Alexander Park, a Point Park grad who is one of the stars of The Sandman, the new Neil Gaiman series that's coming to Netflix on Friday.
All right. We will do TV Talk, TV Q&A in the Trib. Breakfast with Ben's continues, and maybe a Pittsburgh Pop at some point over training camp will do it from the hunting cabin out in Ligonier.
The Trib Live hunting cabin.
Yes, got to see the deer heads and the turkeys. This is Trib Live, and this is Pittsburgh Pop. Rob Owen and Tim Benz.